If you're coming, I'm very happy. That saves me heartache. Today is October 22nd, 2018, and to all the people who are freezing across the world, I put on short sleeves today. Bahame vin yavin. We're hitting 29 degrees centigrade. They call it a chamsin. So, all right, there's some advantages beyond the ordinary ones living in Eretz Yisrael. By Shabbos, Yomo says it'll get colder, but it will still be better than Teaneck, New Jersey, and Lawrence, take my word for it. I want to dedicate today's shiur, a great lady died, Ruth Matar. And Ruth Matar, I know for many decades, her daughter-in-law, who today heads up the organization, Nadja, was my student in Machon Gold. And these are people that recognize that Eretz Yisrael is given to us by the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're the owners. We have to be proud about it. It doesn't mean we have to harm anyone, but we have to let the world understand Eretz Yisrael is ours. And this lady was the co-founder of Women in Green. And when they were organized, they were a small minority. Today, Kanayin Hara, they have representatives in the Knesset in many of the parties, not just the old Maftal. In the Likud, there are people that speak out properly. In Yesh Atid, you have a few who speak properly. And they caused the revolution, and these are great, great people. But that's life. Life moves on. And I want to dedicate this year in Ruth Matar's memory. She had a great husband and the sons. He's I mean, we should live and be well. And I knew him as well. And the sons, one is a medical doctor. The other son, I'm not sure what he does. For a while they came to my Sheyurim. Wonderful, wonderful people. God should bless her soul. Shimi, I want to tell you that I've been looking for Rabbi Avishai David. Is he in the States?
Yeah.
Ah, no wonder. I'm looking and looking and looking since the day we spoke, and he's not around. I wanted to talk with him. Okay. I want to reiterate what I said yesterday, because I consider it very important, that shaver that everyone is asking me about, that Philips came out with this new shaver, and Simon brought it to me when we took it apart, but I'm not an expert in technology. So I just told someone, I wrote an answer to a tshuva, a question I got on last week. And I told them, look, it looks mutter to me, but contact Somit. One day later, in Erev Shabbat's Yediyot, big article on the shaver and how cheap, how much you can get it for, and it's taka relatively cheap. And Yishua l'shimush hilchati shel machon tzomet. So if anyone is using that shaver, know that it has a fabulous Yishua from machon tzomet.
Why do you use it on Shabbos?
Shabbos, nisht va Shabbos, this is Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos, if you come from the world I come from, if you don't come from that world, throw your shavers out. Now, one small correction that I realize I made, and I always make that mistake. I mentioned in passing that Lakewood began in a yeshiva started by Rav Mendel Zaks for the survivors from Europe pouring into America in the early 40s. I believe I said it was in Mount Vernon. It began in White Plains. I know it's not important to you. There are adjacent communities right outside of New York City. But I want to be accurate. Not Mount Vernon. It began in White Plains. How did this come up? A day or two later, between Mincha Marev and Yad Tamar, I met a grandson of one of the original Talmidim, Rav Aaron Kotler, Shmuel Shechter's grandson. And he was amazed that I knew about his grandfather. I said, one day I'm going to get him in my shirim when I deal with the yeshiva in Eastern Europe. I also want to repeat again, and it's been ibigarasht, I don't know how to say that in English, but I'm just overwhelmed with Torah Vedas. They now are the only Haredi yeshiva in the world to have a Rosh Yeshiva, Hudrami, who's the father of a mafaked in Givati, one of the elite units of the Israeli army, the son of Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, the grandson of Mori Verebi, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, a YU graduate, a musmach from Yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Ochanan, and he is the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. It speaks a world of Torah Vadas, and it comes back to what Rav Kepler has been saying for years, that there's a tremendous problem with yeshiva that are family-owned. Torah Vadas is a public institution, and they made some beautiful choice. And if you go online and you see the video of his installation, you'll see Yitzi, who I held in my hands as a baby. He is so bachent, he can relate on a geschmack in Yiddish. Where did he get that Yiddish from? In the Gush, I don't believe they speak in Yiddish. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Reb Aaron and Tovis spoke Yiddish to their children. Could be I'm wrong. Could be they spoke Yiddish. But that he knows Hebrew, of course, it's a given. It's his native language. That he knows English, all right. But Azak, Ashmak, and Yiddish, and when I look at him giving the shiur, and I saw this on the video, it's like Rav Moshe Soloveitchik has come back to life. When I heard the Yiddish, I was listening to Rav Moshe. Now, one other thing, an addendum to yesterday's shiur, a source, Moshe Avrik asked me, where is the source for Rabbi Steinberg's tshuva? And here it is, Tshuvot v'Hagaot, Volume 1, 358. Please give this to Moshe. All right, there's one other comment I have to answer, and I'll answer very simply, and it kind of has to do with last week. First of all, you mentioned that Hagen Das is available in Israel with an OUD. I just saw it. And where is it made? Did you look? Paris? You didn't look. It's from France. Probably. Well, that contradicts the rabbinate's ruling, because Hagen Das all over the world is made with pure milk. And they didn't want to let it in because it's mamish cholov, stam cholov. It's cholov akum. It's stam cholov. The heta that we have with the other imported ice creams is milk powder. And since milk powder didn't exist at the time that this gezeira was enacted, there's no gezeira on it. So milk powder b'dievet can min matazayin for that way of thinking. Not my way of thinking, not Reb Moshe's way of thinking, not the Rav's way of thinking. But that the you saw it, that's interesting. Either he's importing it clandestinely. No, super sold, then they know what they're doing. Then the rabbinate backed off because people like Rakefet started screaming. Okay. Back to last week's shiur, and ready to roll a very important shiur today. I have something to say that, if I'm right, you owe me, the Rav used to say when he said something good, Megebna, a shot of whiskey. If I'm right, I deserve a shot of whiskey. If I'm wrong, spill the whiskey in my face, but we'll get there. So last week we spoke about the convention, about Agudat Yisrael, about the Agudas HaRa, about the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. Interesting that the Mizrahi element, Rav Kanovich, sensed that this can be a big problem for us, that they're going to take over the Paskening and Agudas HaRabban will disappear. And boy, he was a Navi. Nibei v'lo lo yadam mashe nibei. And I told you the story of the kid in, I believe, in Osameach, and he told his Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik was a member of the first Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. Who told you that? Well, I went to a class in Gris Kolel, Harav Rakefet told me that. He's lying to you, doesn't know what he's saying. So the kid looked it up, and I told you where the kid is today. So Jack said to me, Rebbe, you mean one incident like that pushed the kid over the water, over the roof? Jack, I've been alive for many decades. I've taught Torah for many decades. It is never that simple. There is a trend. You understand? It was the kid. His friends told me that that's what he always spoke about. That he spoke of. But if you see, if you lie, if a Rebbe lies, it's like a sex thing. When you catch someone a sex fiend, they publish his name. Immediately, another 50 men or another 50 women come forward. Right or wrong? Isn't this rule of the thumb that if only one woman complains, you don't have to believe it? But once they're two, three, oh boy, they're more than three. Some come forward, some don't want to come forward. I can tell you cases after cases of why you graduate who you saw occasionally in the Shtiblach before you went to jail, a PhD, smicha. Oh my, what that man did. So I know the prosecutors were from boys. I knew their parents from the year one. And they at the Kolta, one time they cried to me that they want to put this guy away for 15 years, but they can't do it because they're like 12 women, 8 of them don't want to appear in court. It'll ruin the shidduch of their children. They're from the semi-Haredi world or the Haredi world. But you see, if you lie to a Talmud and to tell a lie like that, that Rakefet cites Apardes, and Apardes has no axe to grind. It's Mesich Lefi Tumo Shimi, that expression, let the Simon explain to you when he gets Smicha. Mesich Lefi Tumo, the whole Nehmanet of Anakim, you know how much has been written on this, the whole Nehmanet of Heinz, when you eat Heinz baked beans occasionally, they're even imported to Israel. It's Mesich Lefi Tumo, you can believe them. So, but when you lie once, hey, they probably pulled shtick on him right down the line. But that was black and white. But now, I want to come back and I want to go further. The Tehran situation. After 1941 already, there are no more big conventions. Everyone is caught up with World War II. Now, wait, this is the Bar Hatzalah. We're not there yet. Let me get my proper notes. What I have in front of me, by the way, unless I say otherwise, is from my second book, The Silver Era. Later today, I'll be quoting some other material, but right now it's The Silver Era. Now, and here we have to understand, and I'm the greatest Zionist in this room, I don't have to apologize, everyone knows I'm a Zionist, I live like a Zionist, I teach like a Zionist, but you have to be honest. The Zionist movement, Ben-Gurion and his ilk, their hatred for religion was indescribable. Where there was no hatred, they simply viewed religion as primitive. You made a bracha for the Tsar. You take Ben-Gurion's wife, Paula. She did not let Ben-Gurion fast on Yom Kippur. Ben-Gurion had some residue feeling. He was raised in a proper home. She didn't. These are facts. I yet met soldiers. Remember, I'm living here 50 years, so I can combine 150 years of history that I've lived because I met people who lived it. I met two soldiers. This must go back 40, 49, 48 years. I met two soldiers, and they told me the story. Life in Israel when I came in Aliyah was primitive compared to today. Can you imagine what life was like in the 20 years that Israel existed before we came in Aliyah? Okay, we came 69, Israel was founded 48. Just yesterday my granddaughter sat with me and Malka and interviewed us. Where were we when the state was declared? I couldn't get through two words without crying. So, all right, it's important to see your grandfather cry. It's very important in my opinion. So I met two soldiers. There was very little transportation. So when you were leaving the army near Tel Aviv, you hitched. And then the Arabs were afraid of us. There was no fear like today. You can hitch a ride and they'll kidnap you like the three boys. Then the Arabs had fear. They couldn't move freely without permission. It was a different atmosphere. And it was quite successful. So they hitch a ride with Ben-Gurion. So in the car is the driver, B.G., Paula and these two soldiers. In the car, they take off their kumta. Dog, you know what a kumta is? The Israeli army hat. It's called the kumta, right? You've seen it. Everyone has a different color. It's like a beret. It's your pride. The kumta, the color, the unit. Fine. And they have kippah under their kumta. Paula was sitting there, they said, furious. It was like they were desecrating her car. Understand? This was the mentality. They say about Weizmann's wife, and he too, Weizmann also, came from a frum background 100%. He didn't have her enmity, but that when there's an expression in Yiddish, I've taught it to you many times, the Rav's Tochter, the rabbi's daughter. The women, when they hate 50 more times than a man. It's part of, I apologize, Faggy, but it's part of the ethic. It's part of the feminine mystique. You follow? Whoa, boy, when they hate. They say, so Chaim Weizmann died young. They lived in the Weizmann Institute. It was built around them. He was the great professor. He was the one with dynamite. You know what I'm talking? He got the Balfour Declaration. These are not simple matters. And they had a mansion. Am I right or wrong? It's still there, the mansion. What's in it's part of the school today. Here we have what Weizmann people. What? Excuse me?
Museum.
A museum. So she lived there for many years after he died. Vera Weizmann. They say when a Hasidic-looking Jew walked on the campus, she was shaking. She was enraged that these animals are still around. That was her attitude. So we have to be honest. They took the attitude, it's a new tomorrow, a new world. And they, as I told you last week, kids came in with payas from Yemen, they cut the payas off. Moroccan kids, they took chickens. You don't need a sheikha here. They took a knife, a hatchet, just banged the chicken to death. You don't need a sheikha. And this was what was going on. Now, with these kids who are orphans, where do you place them? And they totally took Europeisha children, Kinderlach from Poland. Poland, where more than 50% of the population of the Jews were 10% of the Polish population, more than 50% were frum Jews, Shema Torah and Mitzvot, and at least 70-80% of these kids came from Hasidic homes. Poland was the center of Hasidut. The Gera Rebbe was there. The Chutkova Rebbe was there. The Alexander Rebbe was there. The Mudzitsa Rebbe was there. Afterwards, the Lubavitcher Rebbe came to Poland. And they took these kids and placed them in Shmutsky Butzim and until today, the newspapers are filled with stories about kibbutzim that won't put a shul in. Barak's mother wouldn't put a mezuzah up. We have to go further. So this broke out in tremendous controversy. You see, here already, this is an issue that the modern mind, if you're at least slightly open-minded, you cannot tolerate it. The religious people have a cause. And in America, the Gera Rebbe, other Rabbanim contacted Reb Lazer Silva. They organized a special campaign. Beryl Manashevitz, Reb Hirsch Manashevitz, the son of Reb Beryl Manashevitz, the second generation of the Manashevitz company. He was a wonderful Jew. He got involved. He raised money. And Agudah and Mizrahi showed the government we have place to take the children. And they insisted that they must be honest. And the government, it was a tremendous machloket. The government essentially wouldn't budge. When I say government, I mean the Jewish agency. And here's a letter that was sent to America describing what was happening. At the first meal served, the children were informed that the food was kosher. All sat down to eat except for one 7-year-old boy who remained standing in the corner. The cook came over and asked him why he was not eating. Then the boy raised his eyes and asked her whether the food was really kosher. She began to cry together with the lad. Many of the children snuck away from their irreligious counselors and demanded to be taken to nearby synagogues. The other day, while the house of worship was filled, a group of orphans came in with screams and tears. They threw themselves upon the holy ark. The entire congregation cried bitterly at this sight. No talk or lecture had ever moved the people as much as this event. And I give you the source. I got this from Hapades, but I lived it. I heard it. I was a kid at the time, but within a few years, I was old enough to understand. And this Tehran controversy went on for years. And you have a classic example. One of the Gedolei Yisrael in Israel is Harav Dov Liar. You've all heard the name. There was the Rebbe of Chevron. He's now retired. He's in Yerushalayim. Dafkai, his brother-in-law, is my next-door neighbor. In other words, they were married to sisters. Rav Dov Lior's first wife died, but his sister is my next-door neighbor. And when I go to Kupat Cholim Rehov Gedut Evri, one of the secretaries, is another sister. It's another sister-in-law who works there as a receptionist. So Rav Dov Lior was a gom b'Yisrael, and Adam Gadol, the left, kept him, Yossi Sarid, Shem Rishon Yerkov, kept him off the Supreme Court. They wanted to appoint him to the Supreme Court, but he's too right-wing. A gone idea. His sister, totally irreligious. What's the story? When they came together, they have no parents. It's one of these classic stories out of the Holocaust. Total orphans. She was put in an irreligious kibbutz, and he, by some miracle, you got to read his life story, was able to sneak away and got involved with religious people, taking him back to his early years in Poland. And this story repeats itself time and again. Now, these letters coming in from Israel, the telegrams, one line is very fascinating. It tells you what's happening. The Torah scholars of Eretz Yisrael cry out against what is being done to innocent children. Not only are they enjoined from observing the Torah, but even the chief Rabbi Herzog was not permitted to address them. Now that's a very powerful statement. Chief Rabbi Herzog, Ein lanu tzioni yoker gadol mizeh. But you see, when it comes to religion, they understood the Aguda, the Mizrahi, it's all the same thing, it's old-fashioned, and we want no part of it. We have to take these kids and do them the biggest favor in the world by enabling them to become part and parcel of the new generation, the new Jew, the new Israeli. We're doing them a favor. It's part of the same mentality. Take the Yemenite children away from their parents. They have too many children. They don't have money to feed them, to clothe them. And this mentality and this battle raged for 3 good long years.
This type of thing happens in two places in the world. The same mentality that we are going to create new. In Australia, they took the children from Aboriginal people. In America, took the children from Indian reservations.
And
didn't allow them to speak Indian
language. And in Russia and in China, the re-education camps, the whole concept that we have truth.
So these show us here. That's why Begin got in. What? Because the hatred is still there among
Begin is a little bit deep. It's a real result of the Yom Kippur War. But there's no question that this was one of the greatest problems Israel ever had to face, this enmity between the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim. Now we have to say, to the credit of our world, that in our world, the religious Zionist world, there are no barriers whatsoever. The new generation, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, intermarried, ethnically intermarried, and it's a great achievement. Chabad as well, when they outreach, there's no difference. They don't draw a line. The problem with Chabad is the Ethiopians. We'll leave it for another time. I want to come back here. Now, and this went on and on through 1945. In 1945, a very famous agreement was finally reached. The pressure upon the government, the refugees pouring in, many more religious Jews now surviving and coming to Israel. The massive Aliyah that's beginning from the Arab countries, forget about the DPs, Jews are here to stay, religion is here to stay, and they reached the following compromise. This is a signed agreement, it's been written about, there are books about it. They reached a signed agreement that anyone over 15 years of age was asked, where do you want to go? A religious home or an irreligious location. 15 years of age. Today, I hope they wouldn't leave it for 15. I would say anyone over 18 years of age. But 15, that was the anyone beneath 15 years. Then there was a joint committee, and the Mizrahi, the Aguda, and the non-religious Zionists, the kids were interviewed, try to ascertain their background. And if the kid indicated he knew Shema Yisrael and basic concepts, he was given to the Mizrahi Aguda institutions. And there's a lot of memoir literature on this. The kids who wound up in irreligious places, the example I just gave you of a brother and sister, the brother Agudal B'Yisrael, and the sister totally irreligious and non-observant, although a very continuous ongoing relationship between them, which, by the way, is important too. You don't stop talking to someone because they left the fold. Sometimes a good example, you don't know what the impact will be, if not on the first generation, the second generation, or the third generation. This was finally the agreement that was raised. 1945. Yes?
Who's the organization that was doing this? The Jewish Agency?
The Jewish Agency ran the country. Later, when they're robbing kids from their parents, that's after the declaration of the state, and there's the state of Israel responsible. There'll be tremendous lawsuits that you have no idea as this simmers and comes into the open and documents surface. The trouble is the people who should be in jail are no longer alive. But this was the mentality. Now, what I just told you are absolute facts. But I have to tell you, in my humble opinion, the Tehran children brought about a small miracle that lasted until the early 50s. And that miracle, very simple. In Europe, you're all familiar with the Rav's Chamesh Drasha, Joseph Yechav. Shimi, if you're not familiar, you don't know how to breathe air. So make it your business to get a hold of a Talmud of the Rav, or get hold of Rakefet's lectures on the Bavarian religious Zionism and learn what I'm talking about, Yosef the Echav. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik became a Mizrachist. They drove him out of the Beit Medrash. They laughed at him. They called him an Apikoros, an Oisvaf. Right or wrong? You see it today. Go into Panovich Yeshiva and tell them you heard Sheyorim in Gris Kolel, they have the greatest Rebbeim in the world, and what they have accomplished with their lives. They what? Goyim Shkatzim, Kibbutz Frugat, Tzionim, they say Halil on Yom Ha'atzmaut, etc. Right or wrong? Don't have to go so far. Go into Panovich and mention you're a chassid, you'll be lucky if they don't crucify you. Got it? Go into some Hasidic shtibble, mention you're from Degel HaTeira, I wouldn't sell you life insurance. Believe me. Lo alenu. If you know what's going on with the local elections, it's enough to make you sick. You need another Yom Kippur to take care of it. Vic, you know what happened as a result? Mizrahi and Aguda work together. When it comes to basic concepts, there's no difference between us. We believe in Shabbat and Kashrut and Tarat Mishpacha. All right, so I say Halal Yom Ha'atzmaut. But basically, we're all Jews. You sit in front of the Rav, the famous picture with the Rakefet spent years, he's a dummy Rakefet. Imagine to spend years trying to identify the 29 students. And not only did I spend years, I succeeded. 29 out of 29. That's his Z-Win, absolutely. I told Chaim Soloveitchik, I met Rav Chaim, and he remembered that Izzy, he was all happy. I told him Izzy Wynn came to me in a dream and thanked me. All right, Dad, I don't know how happy he was, but what can I tell you? You see, they fought this battle in a joint fashion. Every telegram mentioned Mizrahi, mentioned Rav Herzog, along with the Rebbeim and the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Sazalman Meltzer, the Gerer Rebbe, Rav Herzog. More than that, when the State of Israel was declared, those of you that sing Shir HaMalot on Shabbat, and by the way, you got to tell Moshe, he misread my sense of humor. I'm not in favor of a Shabbos the way I have it. All right, at my age, we're barely home when we're at the kids. It's a different story. But you got to sing Zmiras on Shabbos. Knew who complained the biggest mistake in his life was he ran to the yeshiva on Shabbos and left his family home. No? Rav Shach, the famous Rav Shach. And then he says, that's why my son turned out the way he did. His son turned out a YU product. Rav Shach we're talking about. But he left his wife. She was the doctor, as if to speak, of the Mei Sharim area. She had to be home, Pikuach Nefesh. So he was in the yeshiva, and his son and daughter were left alone with the wife. And today, the kids need songs, they need emotion, they need feeling. It's not like the way Rakefet was raised, dancing with Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik. Now, there's another factor. As Haredi as we are, as Mizrachistim as we are, no one could ever dream the state would be declared, a tremendous war would be fought, seven Arab nations against us. I told my granddaughter yesterday the state was declared on Friday, Erev Shabbos. We, 7 hours behind, we heard about it in America. We went to Shul Shabbos, everyone was overjoyed, and then we saw the Daily News, which was the most popular paper in New York City, and the headlines were State of Israel declared, seven Arab nations declare war. So I had we had a lot of friends, non-Jewish, and I grew up in a mixed name. So I had a Catholic friend, Anthony. Forget his last name already. Anthony. And Anthony and I were good friends, and Anthony said to me, Arnie, don't be so happy. Seven big armies, they'll destroy the state. You can't fight them. But we were in a trance. And what a miracle. And after 2,000 years of exile, there's a state. There's a flag. There's a declaration of independence. There's Hatikva. It affected every Jew. Every Jew. If a Haredi Jew is not affected by that, it's a sign he's not a Jew. Porish Metzibra, it's no chelik lo haba. So it's like Eder Haredit today. They have not Eder Haredit. The Turakata. The Turakata have no share in Olam Haba. Some of the Satma, but very few. Most Satma today are trying to become better Jews. So when the state was declared, the first thing they did, there were very basic laws had to be passed. You needed a Knesset. 1949, there was a semi-armistice. Am I pronouncing right? Armistice. What word am I looking for? Armistice. Signed. Thank you. And there was what's called, I'm thinking in Hebrew now, hafuga. How do you say that in English? There was a pause in the fighting, and they declared elections. Too bad. There was a pause in the fighting, and they declared elections. My dear students, how did they say? Who used to say it? You can look it up. It was the only time the Aguda and Mizrahi ran a joint ticket together. Could you imagine? A joint ticket. And they did very well. They got something, if I recall correctly, 12 Chafrei Knesset. No one ever thought they'd do that well. Mizrahi and Agudah, a joint ticket in the year 2018. Agudah and Degel HaTorah can't even run a joint ticket. Forget about Shas. Forget about the Bayit Yehudi. A joint ticket. But you see, this is part of my understanding. It's my theory. But I'm fairly positive I'm right. The Tehran children controversy that lasted 3 good years and entire books have been written about it, it brought the Agudah and Mizrahi together. The miracle of the formation of the state and that the army went out, and you got to remember in 1948, endless yeshiva boys fought. There was no such thing yet as a general exemption. The law of the army will first be passed by the Knesset in 49. Everyone fought. Boys, girls, men, women, Haredim, Datiyim, Chavshiyim, the word they used then, Hayinu Kacholmim. And I hold that joint ticket goes back to Tehran. That's what started the process. I'll tell you a side story here. Fascinating. Very famous rabbi in America, second only to Reb Lezer Silva, was Reb Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. You've all heard the name, Elizabeth, New Jersey. You knew him. You knew him personally. I knew him very well. He was my mentor in my house many times. Great man. Great individual. Reb Teitz. His daughter wrote his biography. Learned Torah, lived Torah, loved Torah. His daughter wrote his biography. Wow, you're a miracle man. You walked out and now you doubled in size.
What about the reason?
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. His daughter wrote his biography. His daughter, can anyone tell me who Rivka Teitz's married name is?
Oh, wow.
Rivka Blau, thank you. Who's Jerry Blau? My chavruta. So, Rabbi Yosef Blau Hayom. But I know Jerry and I, we go back. When I was Ani, he was Jerry. All right, so I read the biography, and she writes that her mother had more seichel than her father, absolutely, an open Gemara, Bina Yatera Ben Hashem. I challenge any man here who's happily married to deny that open Gemara. So, and she said, my mother always tried to see that my father used his time constructively, not to waste it on stupid politics. And she says, in 49, with the election, he got involved trying to merge the Mizrahi and the Agudah to have one ticket. And my mother told him, sit and learn. Don't waste your time. It's impossible with these people. And that's what she published. And my mother was right. I said, Rivka, your book has one mistake. Your father helped succeed in 49. They ran a joint ticket. She looked it up, called me back, and thanked me. And if there's a future edition, not just a future printing, but where they can change type, she'll correct it. All right, so Charlie, you have to ask a simple question. ¿Qué pasa? You speak Spanish. They live in Washington Heights today. You need that. I walked into a bank there, and the only language you heard was Spanish. I come to the teller, the Chase Bank. I come to the teller. She's speaking Spanish to me. I don't mind listening to Spanish, but when I got to deal with money, I switched to English. But without, we bought some food around the corner from YU. The lady spoke to us in Spanish. I don't know. I once knew Spanish in high school, but since then, ¿qué pasa? Is about all I remember. What happened? So here I'll tell you what I was told by people who lived it, because I asked the same question, you know, and it hurt me, because when I came in Aliyah, I was, you know, a B'nai Kivanek, a Lakewood boy, a YU guy. There was a lot of Torah in me from all, and there was no conflict, and I saw all the conflict. So I got friendly, Rabbi Koopman, his Chavruta, the people from Hebron, Freund, these people are no longer alive, and they told me what happened. And I talk a red memoir literature, and they hit the nail on the head. Yeah, 49 was the miracle. 50, the miracle continues. By 51, you're back on the ground. The new state of Israel is starting to grow. And that Rosh Hashanah, in Yeshivat Chevron, not when it was here yet, when it was on Rehov HaYeshiva in Geula, Meir Sharim, who was the Rosh Yeshiva? We spoke about him with Rabbi Chil Yaakov Wein, Rabbi Hatzkel Sana. He was the dominant Torah personality, like Rav Shach years later, in the Litvische Welt. And he got up and gave a drasha before the Tkiyat HaShofar. They repeated the, started screaming, Was freuen sich? What are we so happy about? The Chilul Shabbos continues. The enmity towards religion continues. The looking down at the religious Jew continues. They've broken all continuity with what was before. And that drasha was like a wave in the ocean. One wave, mayim l'mayim panim, the pasuk in Mishle. One wave created another wave, another wave, another wave. And it pushed the Haredi world into a ghetto mentality. If we're going to survive, we can't go into the big world. We can't face the big world. And you see, it's that absolute split. The Mizrahi element was part and parcel. All right, Ben Gurion is not a Shomer Shabbos, but we're building a religious kibbutz. The religious kibbutzim became famous. They were the only ones that were solvent. When Begin came to power, we discovered that the only way the Mapai kibbutzim and the Mapam kibbutzim and the Shamatzeh kibbutzim, the only way that they kept going was the government poured billions of dollars into them. They would rule under Begin, under Ben-Gurion and Golda Meir, where you can rob all you want for the party. If you rob for yourself, they executed you. There was one guy robbed from self, committed suicide on the road outside Mavasar. The Minister of Housing, early 70s. Look it up. You'll see that the Rebbe knows what he's talking about. Committed suicide. He robbed into his pocket. So then all the papers had articles. Yeah, Golda robbed billions, this one robbed. But they gave it to the communists, to the socialists. And the only kibbutzim that was solvent, you take kibbutz Tirat Zvi, they're salami products, their salted meat products, their vusht, what do you call it, their general name, processed meat, is the most famous factory in Israel. It's all over the world. Wherever you go to Russia, you can get Tirat Zvi, you go to America, you get Tirat Zvi. They filled in when Lubashkin went under, they went up in sales, they had to double their production. The the furniture of every synagogue in the world is Lavi. It's a religious kibbutz. So you see, the Mizrahi people went out into the big world. It's not that we totally succeeded with our children, but neither did hiding in a ghetto totally succeed. How many religious kids were raised Haredi when they went into the big world? They fell by the wayside. And two different viewpoints developed. Today, so many decades later, you start to see a return. And it's very fascinating. You see, the Gemara is absolutely right. The Jewish people have a built-in, healthy, intuitive, we will survive. And lo neviim heim, b'nei neviim heim. Fuk chazima amad davar, the Gemara in Bracha, daf mem hei amad aleph, right at the top. Go and see what the people do. We have a healthy instinct. And today you see in the Mizrahi world, we're not big enough lamdanim. Kids go to Hester and then they go into the regular world. How much can they learn? While they were in Hester, they had the army in their mind. There's now funds. This is the Neria family, raised heavy funds. I think it's, 50 kids a year. They endow them for 5 years, sit and learn, become big lamdanim. You see, in the Mizrahi world, people are looking for a Rebbe, for singing, for warmth. Take a look at the Haredi world. So many are coming out. Just go next door to Machon Lev. 2,000 Haredi students. Why are they coming out? They're no longer afraid. They don't have to be frightened. The whole general atmosphere of Israel has changed. They interviewed a lady who's in her mid-90s today. When she turned 90, she lives in Rehavia all her life. She's from the salt of the community, from Mapai and all that went on. Ruth Cheshen, husband was Supreme Court judge, and Jerusalem Post interviewed her, and they asked her, what can you say? You've lived in Rehavir all your life. What are the changes? And she said, I never thought I would live to see the day when my neighbors in Rehavir would look down upon me for driving on Shabbat. That's what that woman said. And I say, Ashreinu Shezachinu, that in Rehavir, which was a neighborhood established to get away from the Yishuv HaYashan and the Flumkite that was there, and the professors of Hebrew U who laughed at religion lived in Rehavir, and the Germans who ran away from Hitler, who had no religion but were Jews and being persecuted. When I came in Aliyah, the language you heard on the streets in Rehavir was German. Sharei Chesed, Rehavir. Jewish. Sprechen Sie Deutsch? Jawohl. That's what you heard. And thank God we've reached the point where her neighbors look down upon her for being stupid enough to desecrate the Holy Sabbath, which is the secret of Jewish existence. Okay. So that's my theory, and you got to go a long way to prove me wrong. The Tehran children, the cooperation, they're all from Jews. How do you take kids and make them a Chol HaShabbos? And this takes us back to a very basic question that exploded right when Alon Shvut came to the Kota and came to Gris in the mid-70s, early 80s. The early years when they asked for Baron Lichtenstein at a press conference in the yeshiva, he called it a press conference, when he answered questions, who do you have more in common with? The Chiloni Jew in Tel Aviv or the Haredi Jew in Mea Sharim? And Rabban said, absolutely, with the Haredi Jew in Mea Sharim. And some of these Israeli raised kids went crazy. What do we have in common with them? And A.B. Kelman, and Rabbi Kelman, he's the one who asked me that exact question here in Gris. I remember it like yesterday. And boy, you better ask yourself, who do you have more in common with? The Machal Shabbos, Ochling Levedit and Trefet, walking with his dog in North Tel Aviv? Yes, he served in the army, he risked his life, he speaks a better Hebrew than I do. Or the Jew in Geula, Vasgates and Gerer Rebbe, every Friday night to the Tish, and Shalashudis to the Tish, and Chab Shirayim, who do I have more in common with? And boy, for me, it's no question whatsoever. The Jew in Geula, with all my critique of him. But I have much more in common. Okay, Jack, what did you want to ask? Let me go a little further.
Ask that question. I think I know the answer, but I'll...
Go ahead, ask.
Chazal say that only machloket where one side is 100% right and the other side 100% wrong was Moshe Rabbeinu and Korach. Every other machloket...
Right,
one side, 99.999%, right? The other side will still have a little...
Okay.
Mizrahi, the split between the good and Mizrahi. Mizrahi had... You tell it's a good... The good is 100% responsible for the split.
No, why 100%?
Does Mizrahi have some...
Mizrahi, look.
What could they have done?
Mizrahi created a new world. The Aguda couldn't handle it. We'll come to this in the Sunday class. Mm-hmm. You know what you have, you don't know what you're going to get. You understand? I argue with my grandchildren. I said it yesterday in class. My grandchildren consider the Haredim apikorsim. They don't say, I tell them, look, you got to understand them. I don't justify they're not serving the army. My grandchildren are right halachically. The Gemara in Saita, the Rambam, Perek Zayin, Hilchot Melachim. But, look at Mendelssohn. Now, by the way, I have to tell you, I got correspondence that I don't know why I don't have it here. It could be I have to check my emails, what Sherry gave me, because Sherry didn't have it ready for me when I left yesterday at 11:30, whatever time it was. So I got correspondence from someone who told me that his wife worked for a lady, did research under a lady who was a professor at Albert Einstein College, and her married name was Rosen, her maiden name was Mendelssohn. She died in 1990. A famous lady, did a lot of research, good head. And she claimed she was a direct descendant of Mendelssohn. So I have to tell you, in any textbook, and I looked into the Bible on Mendelssohn, Alexander Altman's work on Mendelssohn, which is the classic work, the work on Mendelssohn. Everyone says that only one grandchild died Jewish, and there was not one great-grandchild Jewish. Now, it may be that this lady who has the Mendelssohn name, could be she's related to a brother of Mendelssohn, a cousin of Mendelssohn. You know, it was something that his wife remembers from 30 years ago. It could be a mix-up. But if that's correct, it would be very fascinating to publish that there is a direct descendant of Mendelssohn. It has to be checked out. But I couldn't. The little checking I did not contradict, nor did it correspond and certify what his letter claimed to me. But anyway, even if there is one direct descendant Mendelssohn alive, don't forget what we said last week. Bartholdy, the person on the legation of the German Educational Committee, meeting with the Israeli educational delegation when they established relations. So one of the Israeli people, he was a librarian, he knew a fabulous amount of knowledge. He sees the name and he says, "Are you a great-grandson?" And the person says, "Yes, I'm a great-grandson of Moses Mendelssohn, a goy gomor, a wasp, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant put in a white German Protestant." But you know what you have? You don't know what you're going to get. Okay, yes, Yitzchak, I want to go.
The Weltanschauung of the world is diametrically opposed to what you just said. Forgive me for saying.
Well, what are you talking about?
Because the world felt that the Mizrahi way, that's why, why did he give a talk about Yosef and his brothers? The Rav's name was Yosef. When he talked about the brothers hated him, it was autobiographical that the Haredi world hated him. Who would ever call a Gadol J.B.? That was insulting.
Okay.
So when someone asked me in the East Side, I remember at the bookstore, I said to them, "Well, I study at YU, but I don't know anybody called J.B. Do you study with M.F.?" It looked to me like I was crazy.
Right,
I'm
well aware of what the Rav said, and I've repeated it 1,000 times. Also, in the Chamesh Drashas, the Rav says, and this has also been cited, he lets his hair down and says, "Do you think it's easy for me to be a Zionist? I am not a Zionist like Chaim Weizmann's, trial and trial and error. Trial and error," he says, "Torah comes first." So I wouldn't dismiss the Rav altogether that he would totally disagree with me. We both chose to be Mizrachiites. But on the other hand, you have to understand that I learned in Lakewood, told Rav Aaron Cutler off, how many people would have the gall to say to Rav Aaron Cutler, "B'nai Akiva is the ultimate truth." Understand? And Rabbi Naya, he answered me. You know, he answered me. So I wouldn't agree with you that the Rav would totally disagree, but if you say he disagrees, I'll accept that too. But I stand on my words. Now, coming back to Agudah in America, and I want to know for Agudah now, there's no question that Reb Lazer Silva belonged to a generation that loved the Mizrahi, even though he was an Agudist. He could sit with them, he could understand them. Yes, you can say before World War II the times were different. You can say his own children became Mizrahiites. And as Reb Lazer said, "Agud is my elder sister, Mizrahi is my younger sister." What happened to Agudah after World War II, and here I want to be very brief, I leave it to you. As I said, I don't want to get involved with Torah history after 1960, because by 1960 I'm a player on the scene and I have a prejudice. I explained to you many times, I'm desperate to find someone to write about Reb Shmuel Belkin. So people say, "Rebbe, why don't you write about Reb Shmuel Belkin? How can I write about him? He appointed me a Rosh Yeshiva, drank a L'chaim with me. I have a prejudice. You need someone." When I wrote about Rabbi Revel, I didn't dream I was related to him. Someone would have said to me, Ani, you're writing about your own blood relation. What are you, crazy? And I didn't know Rabbi Revel. I only knew he had a red beard. What I told you yesterday was so important in answering Professor Shapiro's question, answering Mark's question. But I know that from his Talmidim, who I interviewed. I know a little bit more, but about the red beard, it's the Zeichet, the Reiter, and they had another expression that also involved Reiter, not as complimentary. It resembles Rav Shmuel Gerstenfeld and what they referred to him behind his back. And if you're a dean, a president, or a yeshiva, you're bound to make friends, but you're also bound to have critics who feel you didn't appoint them, you didn't give them a proper advancement, acknowledgement, etc. To be like Rakefet, you don't have to make enemies, you don't make friends, you can get along with everyone because you just sit and teach. Following World War II, the whole history of Aguda centers around two people. The first is Rabbi Aaron Cutler, obviously, and the second is, afterwards, Rabbi Moshe Scherer. Let me say a few words about their lives, and you can take it further with the research in the future. Rabbi Aaron Cutler, 1891-1962. There is no doubt that of all the Yudapayesh Rosh Yeshiva who came to America, the most dominant personality was the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Aaron Cutler. If you want to understand who Rabbi Aaron was, just bear in mind what I've said in class and repeated many times, and it's all online. You can find it in the computer. Harav HaGaon Google. When the question came up, Cuba, Yom Kippur, Castro is willing to let out some Jewish families, and the plane is leaving on Yom Kippur. And the Rav got the question, can we be mate the Jews leaving on Yom Kippur, flying out on Yom Kippur? All right, simple question, yes or no? Yom Kippur? And the travel agent to ask the Rav the question, the Rav said to him, I'll get back to you in an hour or two. And he got back to him. And the Rav told him, take them out on Yom Kippur. It turned out that Castro had no evil intent, and he didn't realize that that day was Yom Kippur. And when they told him, he said, fine, you'll go out on the flight, the next flight after Yom Kippur. Many, many years later, these two people, the travel agent and the Rav, met at a wedding. And the travel agent, who had done very well and now was very big in Mizrahi circles, went over to the Rav and said, Rebbe, why couldn't you answer me right away? Why did you call me back an hour and a half later? And the Rav said, don't you know what I did? I called the Rabbi Aaron Cutler to consult with him. A question like this, you don't decide on your own. No? Dov, what does that tell you? Murray, he called Rabbi Aaron Cutler. I don't have to tell you, he didn't call the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He didn't call Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, his cousin. Called Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Now, it gives you an idea who Rabbi Aaron was. Now, the story with Rabbi Aaron is legendary. And you all know that Rakefet has said many times, Oskrol has biographies around many American Gedolim, not about Rabbi Aaron Cutler. And there's a reason why. Because Rabbi Aaron, the story of his youth, his sister, the communist, Rabbi Aaron ready to leave Slabodka, go to Moscow University, Rabbi Aaron, the Russian literature, all these stories, they whitewash. You can't have a kid. You can't have Shimi know that Rabbi Aaron struggled whether he should remain in the yeshiva world or the big university world. Well, you understand, it's not Rakefa teaching. I teach honestly, to the best of my ability, to the best of my knowledge. But you have to be honest. You don't tell Bubba Mises. A kid has to know Uvachata b'chayim. All of life is our choices. No such thing as life without choice. The color of the car you buy, you know, that's a simple decision. The yeshiva you go to. Where do you live? Kalamazoo, Michigan, or up in the Golan Heights? Are you just a social security number? Or you want to do something that will be eternal? Who am I? Why? So these are all cars. What do I do with a computer? Do I learn Torah? Do I watch the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Fabrengens? There's enough on the computer you can watch for 10 full years just watching the Rebbe with Fabrengens. Or do you watch pornography and murders and who knows what other garbage is on the computer? Life is filled with choices. When you drive and someone is pulling out, you can go past them and tell them go fly a kite, or you can stop and wave them in, do a chesed. It's a simple choice. Okay. Reb Aaron Cutler deserves a full-length scholarly biography. He was a genius, an orphan, a gadol shebegadolim. Yes, he had one sister, Malka, his older sister, and the Alt of Slabatka did not let him reach, her letters could not reach Reb Aaron. He censored them, took them away. What word would you use? He robbed them? I don't know. That's an interesting question. Dov, did you ever teach? What happens if you picked up a letter your student got 16 years old from a girlfriend smudged with kisses on the back? Do you give it to him or do you rip it up and throw it away? The letters from BMT I gave to them. I gave them hell. I said, that's the letter you get from your girlfriend? It should say S-W-A-S-K in back, sealed with a spiritual kiss. Got it? Oh boy. Sealed with a spiritual kiss. The kid got the message? I don't know. I know I had many kids who were a little wild. And they're the greatest Jews alive today. You have no idea what BMT turned out. Go to Yehuda B'Shomrim, the Golan Heights. All over Israel, you'll meet BMT products, Machon Gold products, Kainayin Hara. Edith Shebe Edith, the best of the best. So a kid is a kid. You got to know how to deal with it. But life is filled with choices. Reb Aaron ultimately stays in Slabatka. You know who kept him there? Reb Reuven Vrizovsky. We spoke about him. The Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vedas. Reb Yitzchak Lichtenstein's grandfather-in-law. Reb Reuven Vrizovsky. Reb Yitzchak married the daughter of Reb Chaim Krasovsky. I learned in Leichertons of Reb Reuven's son. Reb Reuven was the son-in-law of Reb Baruch Ber Leibovitch. He kept Reb Aaron, pulled him off the bus, the train, whatever. Stops. Bleiben in Slabatka. Don't destroy your worlds. And I can go on and on and on. Reb Aaron, it's not the time now. Or the play. Leave it. We did in the past. I spoke about Reb Aaron in great lengths. But Reb Aaron was a short man. I have found in life short people change the world. It may be they have a complex. Steve Riskin, how tall is Reb Shlomo Lariskin? How many people do you know who changed American Orthodoxy, Balei Tshuva, and built an entire community in Israel? How many people do you know? I know only one. One chaver of mine sat with me in the Rav Shir. Short little guy. Did you ever meet Joe Lookstein, the famous Rabbi Joseph Lookstein, the man who built Gehillat Jeshurun, the man who built Ramaz? Oh, was he 5'2"? We spoke with Yitz and I studied with him. What was he, 5'3"? So Reb Aaron Cutler was maybe 5'3", 5'4", at the most, if. When he came to America, he would not compromise with his thinking. Agud is Aguda, Mizrahi, not on the proper Hashkafa. Big world, Zionism, cooperation with the Chafshiyim, as they called them then. He didn't budge. And as much as Reb Aaron and the Rav respected each other in learning, not when it came to the Rav's Hashkafa. Why you? College. The Vah Hashem Bazar, Reb Aaron would quote the Gemara in Chelek, you disgrace God's way, words, by wasting your time and studying general subjects. Dov, you went to YU, I went to YU, Vietz, we're all YU graduates here. Charlie, Harvard, you had to work three times as hard as us to pass all your courses, get your doctorate there. Imagine what you could have been had you sat and learned. You would have been a Godel Hador today. Morty, come on. This is Reb Aaron. He doesn't... The concept of the Rav, that each one has their own interests, their own abilities, their own psychological, emotional makeup. Reb Aaron lo garas etza. And he built Lakewood. If you would have told the people surrounding Reb Aaron back in 43 that by 2019 there are going to be 7,000 people sitting in Lakewood and learning Torah, and the whole city of Lakewood is going to expand on all sides, and it's the fastest growing community in America, and Jews from all over the world, Lakewood. I was in East Brunswick. They wanted to take me to see Lakewood. I wanted to go, but no energy. You know, I spoke that morning in East Brunswick to start traveling an hour plus with my wife and an hour. Chavnish de Kayach, but... one day I'll call upon my friends there. I want to see Lakewood. Who can believe when I was in Lakewood, a little nothing, 100 students. And Reb Aaron created that split. He could never say, Mizrahi's my younger sister and Agudah's my older sister. To Reb Aaron, he had one sister. That was Agudah. Nothing else compared to it. And that gave the Agudat Yisrael in America a different hue, a different tone, a different configuration. It's not the Agudah of the 30s into the 40s. That was Reb Aaron. I need not tell you, when he died, it was the biggest funeral ever held in America since Reb Yaakov Yosef's funeral. And the split was there, the chasm was there. You will know at that funeral, the Calvarilla Shul on Eldridge Street on the east side, the Rav came with a whole drusha in his pocket to eulogize Reb Aaron. And he was never asked to speak. By miracles he got him. I don't believe they let him. Yeah, I think he did get into the shul, but the Reb Aaron's Talmidim would not let him sit up front with the Rashi Yeshiva. Apadex had an editorial afterwards criticizing the Talmidim. But that was Reb Aaron. Those were his Talmidim. The Satmaruv did eulogize him. I believe it was not in the Eldred Shul. I think that was later when they were ready to move on or at the airport. But that was Reb Aaron. The body came here. He's buried in Har Menuchot. That was Reb Aaron. But there's one other man who is totally involved with Agudat Yisrael in America. And that individual I can call a close personal friend of yours truly. His name, Rabbi Morris Shera, or Rabbi Moshe Shera. His years, 1921 to 1998. So that Reb Moshe Shera comes on the scene after Reb Aaron. Reb Moshe Shera's biography is extremely fascinating, interesting. It captures the era. He came from a poor home in Brooklyn, three brothers. I believe he was the youngest of the three brothers. Harry was the eldest. There was a middle brother who I didn't know. I knew Harry very well. Moshe Morris was the youngest. He went to Torah Vadas. Torah Vadas, outlook not much different than Torah Vadas of today. Second most important yeshiva in America at that time, only second to yeshivas Rav Schochanan, or what you call YU today. Mr. Mendelovich, a very open person. It would have been a different Torah Vadas following World War II if Mr. Mendelovich had had his way, but Rav Aaron ruled otherwise, and I'm referring, of course, what we've spoken about so many times, when Torah Vadas wanted to open a college with Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin, and Mr. Mendelovich was totally in favor, and Rav Aaron Kotler nixed it. Moshe leaves Torah Vadas and goes to Ne'er Yisrael. And here, of course, the question is, why did he leave Torah Vadas? Why did he leave Brooklyn? Why did he go to Ne'er Yisrael? And it may very well be the story that a guy named Rakefe tells in Washington. And everyone quotes that story. They say it's more fascinating than many of the other stories. And the story is very simple. I believe I've told the story in class, but I'll repeat it. Maybe I told it years ago when I spoke about Agudat Yisrael. Story is very simple. In 1980, the Mossad tapped me on the shoulder and got me involved in Russia. Harav Rakefe, ata mukhan lelamed gemara b'Moskva. That was Arye Kroll. It's our first conversation. I get a phone call. Haim ata mukhan lekabel sicha b'li legalor pratei sicha. Rabbi Rakefe, are you willing to accept a phone call, but you cannot tell anyone about the contents? That was Mailer. Remember Arye Kroll's secretary, Romanian Mailer? So I said, I thought it was a student, I'll be honest with you. I'm only speaking because when you're over 80, you have to be totally honest. I've gotten calls from students doing terrible sins. They don't identify themselves, and they think I'm a priest, that I can tell them, say two Hail Marys and God will forgive you. So I got a call a few months before that from a girl who I taught Machon Gol. I cannot tell you what she told me. My mouth cannot mouth it. But she was committing adultery, but in the sense that it's halachically she wouldn't be executed. Daila Hakima. And I told her off. I said, my husband is much older. She was living in Tzfat. So I figured this call is from some sort of student. And on the phone gets Arye Kroll, who in 2002, when they lift the security clause, will get Pras Yisrael. Are you willing to go to Moscow and teach Torah? All right. So Malka and I go to Moscow, and the rest is history. You can read about it. My new book is going to have more material. I read some of it last night. I'm trying to do the corrections, and it was overwhelmed. You know, I relived it. It's Ani Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when you go to Russia and you come out, it's like going to the Warsaw Ghetto and coming out. So you got to do something for your people. So among other things, I decided Malka and I were going to get this family out of Russia. They've been in refusal since 73. It's now 81. And they have three children, and we're going to get them out. All right. We ultimately did get them out, and took 5 years, and the greatest compliment of my life, Arye Kroll says to me, Harav Rakefet, anachnu matzti im lecha. Jack, you know what that word means? We salute you. And he said, well, read the book, or read the next book where I have it all, with what happens, etc., with the phone operator, Israel, it's too much. But let me come back. I want to get them out. So I start looking around, who is the leading Jewish lay leader in America who has influence? And everyone tells me, Moshe Sharon. So, I contact him. I want to make an appointment to see you. I raised money. I had no money then. I was a very poor individual. It was a different Israel, and I raised money to pay for my ticket. I thanked the Fink family who helped, etc. And my daughter had just graduated Michlala, my eldest daughter, and her other grandparents, my in-laws, paid for her to come and spend some time with them as a graduation gift in New York. So I took my daughter with me to visit Reb Moshe Scherer. And he's sitting there, Besser is sitting there, Zichronim Levracha, myself and my daughter. And he says to me, Rabbi Rakefet, we checked out who you are, and we do know you're a Gaon, you're a Tzaddik, these are exact words, and you're also the last Mizrachiite left alive. And I said to Rav Moshe, I said, I doubt whether I'm a Gaon or a Tzaddik, but certainly in your office, I'm the last Mizrachiite left alive. And then I say to him, by the way, I knew your brother Harry very well. And immediately, the whole atmosphere changes. And I show him the pictures. And we start talking. And he says, this can't be. These pictures are from Yerushalayim. And I said, no, look at the furniture. It's not Kiryat Moshe. He said, no, it's Kiryat Moshe. And his eyes, so I get more the credit. Before I was finished, he called in Rabbi Bloom, who today plays a big role, and it started the Agudat Yisrael of America's involvement, and Moshe Scherer worked with me hand in hand, as you see from the correspondence that I published, that others have published, that his own son published now. We became best friends. And when we walk out downstairs, this is yet on 5 Beekman Street, the old location, so my Lower East Side. So my daughter says to me, Abba, I don't understand. He told you off, and then you said something to him, and his whole tone changed. I said to my daughter, to Ina, you're absolutely right. Now let me explain to you. Moshe Scherer is the only religious Jew that remained from in his family. His eldest brother was a Torah Vadas graduate who went on to become a Reform Rabbi, Hebrew Union College graduate. The man's list of women would make President Trump look like a tyro. And that's Dove without exaggeration. I'll tell you endless stories, not important now. He was my principal in Yeshiva Salanta. I was 12 years old, president of the student council. And I walked into his office. I need not tell you the sight I saw. I could have thrown away Kol HaTorah Kula. You have hormones then, you're 12 years old. It's a different story. Oh boy. They say the reason that Reb Moshe Scherer, the Rebbeim, said, go to Nei Yisrael, to get him away from the influence of his older brother. The middle brother, I'm told, he went into business, became a successful businessman, dabbled in the conservative temple, died quite young. You should know that Harry just died about a year or two ago, over 100 years old. And here was a man who went so far off the path that he performed weddings for Jew and Gentile without conversion. And when he died, I couldn't look it up, Harafagon Google, the bulk of his money was left to Chabad. And once again, you have to bow humbly before Chabad. What they can accomplish, no other Jew in the world can. As learned as that Jew may be, as pious as that Jew may be, as the biggest tzaddik that Jew may be, the biggest gomel chesed, Chabad has a certain siyata d'shmaya that's indescribable. The little I could find out was that most people grow older, the world doesn't give a damn about them. You've lived too long. You've outlived your existence. And it's true. Part of growing old, as Malka says, we barely have friends. All our friends are gone. Yitzi's shaking his head. I see it. So Malka says, we have to make younger friends. No, go and make younger friends. We try. But Chabad, you're alive. You're a human being. Doesn't matter what you did before. You can still do tshuva. All right, it's not the same when you do tshuva when you're 39 and in strength, but nevertheless, it still is. Didn't Rabbi Ganak deal with President Clinton to do tshuva? It's quite a story. And I want to tell you, and I'll end off the class, there was no communal leader with the ability, the insight, the character, the wisdom, like Reb Moshe Scherer. And you should know he suffered. He didn't have a beard, he was clean shaven. When he came to Israel, the Aguda press would rip the hell out of him. Agoy, a shekets, an oisva, a trumpenik on a board, no beard. But they said, well, he has to meet with presidents of the United States. Today, anyone meeting with President Trump, they all have beards. Any Jew who meets with him, one beard is longer than another. But in the 70s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, he was the executive vice president. I think then they named him executive president of Agudat. He ran Agudat Yisrael. Agudat Yisrael was like we spoke about, I think it was in the Sunday class. Without the Yekis, there'd be no Agudah on the map. Who ran the world Agudat Yisrael? Moreinu Harav Jacob Rosenheim from Frankfurt am Main. You follow? You need it. A Chassidic Rebbe can run Agudat Yisrael. A Litvish and a Shishiva. Vashalten Lernen has been Machadesh Teirer and a Rambam. He can run Agudat Yisrael. Reb Moshe Scherer. But more than that, he never ran it with negativism. He ran it with positivism. And the fact that all these letters appear now when Reb Kaplan has a certain reputation, which is, I spoke about this yesterday, unfortunately people say, I'm an author. God, that's the last thing in the world I would boast about. I'm a Rebbe, I'm a Malamed. Okay, that I'm happy to boast about. Mizrachist, we were like brothers. I totally trusted him. He totally trusted me. Read some of the letters, but I can tell you the conversations. And unbelievable man. And he helped me immeasurably. Read the new book, what I'm coming out with. But I got to give him a lot of credit. Now with this I end off. In the state of Israel, as Agudah gained power and gained money and gained prestige after Begin came to become prime minister, and all the Aguda schools, you no longer had a schnurra and plead with the Rav to come speak at a Chinuch Atzmai dinner in 1956, you know what I'm talking about. Now the government pays everything, every child, Chinuch Atzmai, Mamlachti Dati, Mamlachti, it's exactly the same, essentially. Rav Shach introduced a tremendous cleavage here that we are part and parcel of until this very moment. From his point of view, he was right. He totally split Agudat Yisrael. Chassidim are a bunch of apikorsim. Period. Chabad, the worst. Ger, second. Totally split Agudat Yisrael. They said to him, Rav Shach, to Tutz, to Dabrechs, you're destroying, was the Chafetz Chaim had geboyt, what the Chafetz Chaim built. And he said, Chafetz Chaim built Agudah when Chassidim and Midbakdim were from, today they're not. It's idol worship. And this is Rav Shach's point of view. I'm not here to critique him. I don't agree with him. But all right, you're entitled. There is some truth to what he's saying. I no question about it. I told you in class yesterday what I saw Shabbos. In America, there was one Rosh Yeshiva who followed Rav Shach 100%. His name, Reb Elliot Zwei. I yet knew Reb Elia from Lakewood. I knew him from Philadelphia. He established the branch of Lakewood in Philadelphia together with Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. Reb Elia Tzvei, I believe he was married to Reb Kamenovich's daughter, the mirror president, Rosh Yeshiva's daughter, if my memory is correct. Some I think Devorah, that's the name that remains in my mind, but I hope I'm right. If anyone corrects me, I'll be very happy. And his father was an Alta Litvische Talmud Chacham, Reb Elia Tzvei. And Reb Elia Tzvei was a Talmud Mufak of Reb Aaron Kotler. And Reb Elia Tzvei felt an obligation that you have to bring that Machloket to America. Shach said, Chassidim, out. And Moshe Shera, who after all, Reb Elia Tzvei was an Adam Gadol, Reb Moshe Shera, so canny, so wise, such sensitive ability, he kept that Machlokes out of America. It's amazing. I give you a simple example. You want to see Halacha L'maisa? Tell me, though, Friday night, you sit down to eat, is your wife at the table with you?
Yes.
Absolutely. It's an open mission in Ketuvot. Morty, where's Dana when you sit down to eat? At the table. No, Shimmy, you come from a Gera Hasidish Shtup? What do you mean, no? Alta. We made the connection. The Gera Rebbe's a cousina there. No, where does your wife eat? In a separate room. Right or wrong? Take my word for it. The Gera separate. The Slunim separate. Chassid. Afreusel sitzim with the man. A woman should sit with the man. My dear students. Simple. Reb Moshe Shera. The solution that evolved. The high point of the Aguda year is their convention. I believe it's Thanksgiving Day time. OU and the Aguda reached a deal that one holds their convention Christmas time and one Thanksgiving Day time, and they can have a long weekend. When you sign up for the convention, among the other things you have to indicate, low floor, high floor, special dietary needs, etc., family seating, or separate seating. Chassidim, separate seating. Litvakin, family seating like in Europe. No split. One convention. One dining hall. But a very simple, ingenious solution. And this is just one example of Reb Moshe Shera. He had that ability to keep dignity and to keep unity. And I salute his memory, belave for nefesh. But it was never again, Agud is my elder sister and Mizrahi is my younger sister. Yomo, I end off with a proof that I'm absolutely right. No, what's the proof? Yitzchak. When Rav Leizer Silva Eti hit 75 years of age. Have you ever opened up the Silva volume, seen the picture? Where did they celebrate his 75th birthday? Not Agudas HaRabbanim, which is Lichtenstein, I don't want to translate that. Not Agudat Yisrael, which can't tolerate someone who still has a little Mizrahi in his blood. Rabbinical Council of America. It's the famous picture with all the famous American rabbis. And there they are, saluting Reb Leizer Silva. Aaron, you're right. You hit the nail on the head. That proof, very sharp and irrefutable. My dear students, to repeat, what have we done today? All right, the Tehran controversy, Rakepet's theory, Mizrahi, Aguda, the 49 elections, Rabbi Teitz, Rivka Blau. What happens after World War II? Reb Aaron Kotler, Moshe Shera, Rav Silva's 75th birthday. To all my dear students, next week is extraterritorial. We're going to Lawrence, New York, the Shari Tefila congregation. This past summer, I was supposed to give 3 lectures there. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, she'hakol nehyeh bedvaro. And the Ribbono Shel Olam ruled or willed otherwise. I was very sick. I had no voice. The Sunday lecture, when I could use a microphone, I did give. But I owe them 2 special lectures. Sunday next weekend, I revised this lecture because of conversations I have. It's going to be a very important public statement Sunday. The Marriage Dilemma, from Rabbis Emanuel Rachman to Avadja Yosef. I wouldn't miss that lecture for all the people rotting away in the jails in communist China at this moment in time. Monday, the Rav in Berlin influences that last a lifetime. I have a lot to say, and some of it I've never really elaborated on before. We leave it for next week. I wouldn't miss that lecture for all the lies that are circulating in Saudi Arabia about what happened to that poor person who wrote for the newspapers. If anyone wants... Excuse me? Whatever he was. Now, we didn't kill him. I know he's rabidly anti-Israel. That's why Saudi Arabia got rid of him, probably. Anyone who wants... It could be. That's one of the theories. Anyone who wants... Yeah, I know. If anyone wants on Reb Yitzchak Lichtenstein, I love this. I just love the pictures. Woman in Green, co-founder, if you want to read about Ruth Matar, Nadia's mother-in-law. This is for Charlie, Mrs. Shulamis Bechafa, 87, OBM. How does she relate to you? The beautiful, beautiful by obituary. This is to give Yitz Rubin a little bit Agmas Nefesh. An article from the Journal of Chinese Medicine. Tefillin, an ancient acupuncture point prescription for mental clarity.
Really?
Got it? The Chinese Medical Journal. Here it is. I couldn't make this up, can I? And here, with all the acupuncture, with the tefillin, with the acupuncture, with everything. There you are.
Really believe
it. There you are. This was one of the freebies over Shabbos. I got to tell you, the freebies have some good information in them. And this is an article on Pashach Lech Lecha by Rabbi Brenda. Okay? In the Pasha, he also deals with Lech Lecha Matzim Alapim Ibat Devicha. Very nice statement. It's his first public statement in Israel. Speaks about that making Aliyah, what he wants to accomplish. The Hebrew is magnificent. If this is Kadriel, Harav Kadriel, Brenda's Hebrew, I salute him. If it was edited by my children, that's a different story. This is unbelievable. They're now going to build in Hebron. The Prime Minister, thank God, gave permission. We're dealing with a Prime Minister. I am not happy, but that's a different story. Anyway, of course, I don't know what he knows, but nevertheless, if you're running Israel, you have to look up to God, not sideways. So what they're building, the purchase, the neighborhood, it was purchased by Chabad in 1909, and here's the Kushta. They found the purchase, Chabad had the documents, and they've given it to the government. They're thrilled that they're going to be Jews living on their property. I hear pictures that I don't need to see because I lived it. But here's a picture of a wedding, must be the early 50s. And the men, and there's Rav Moshe, there's Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, and they're sitting with women at the same head table. Pictures that do not lie. And I end off with the greatest picture of all. Can anyone see who these two people are? There is Reb Aaron Lichtenstein and Reb Yehuda Amital. No one knows when the picture was taken, but you can see looking at Reb Aaron, it has to be at least 30, 40 years ago. He's a kid. Reb Amital is wearing a hat, a smart-looking gray hat. Where was it taken? What does this picture remind you of? They're pictures, fabulous pictures, of Reb Chaim Meiser, Reb Shimon Shkup, out in the woods during the summer on vacation. And, you know, vacation meaning breathing good, fresh air. Exactly pictures like this. There's Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich, where he's taka sitting on the floor, surrounded by students. So if anyone went to the Gush, here is a fabulous picture of some of the greatest Jews that ever walked in the state of modern Israel. My dear students, both of you sitting in front of me, and I thank you very much for coming and honoring me with your presence, and to all those listening across the wide expanse, what we call sub-students, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. Shimi, you know what Das Vidanya means? Yitzchak, will you take him to Russia and let his eyes open?
You know what Lehitra Ot means?
Lehitra Ot, Arava, Chow. I gotta say it like an English donkey, Chow. Das Vidanya. Thank you so much. What a pleasure. Yeah, take and upload.
Yeah, and you believe it?